What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 44 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Rob, you're back, brother. How is everything going? You feeling good after your fight, getting back in Australia?
Yeah, mate, I am stoked. I am stoked. It is so good to be back, mate. Every time I leave the country, I realize just how good we have it here.
And yeah,
mate, I'm in a good place. I'm in a really good place. Firstly, before we start talking about anything, I want to say good job, man. Good job on the episodes. Solo flying, like just running this ship by yourself while I was occupado. And I appreciate that. Hope all you fans out there appreciate that. Appreciate the work Johnny put in. But we're back and yeah, let's get into it.
Thank you so much, man. That really does mean a lot. And for everyone that was supporting those videos as well while Rob was gone, I really do appreciate it. If you are here, if you are new, please like, subscribe. But Rob, of course, got to ask you about your fight. Got to ask you about everything that took place in Saudi Arabia at UFC Fight Night. Tell us, man. Tell us about the fight and how you thought it went.
So firstly, Johnny did ask me, hey, you got anything to say about the opponent switch? And I said, I'll get you a video. And I proceeded to not do that.
I wasn't going to mention that.
I'm sorry. The week was kind of hectic because that week coming into Dubai, I was training. I looked to train the extra week we're there pretty hard.
Yeah.
And then the opponent shift, the way it happened was morning, I got up. Alex brought me aside and goes, hey, mate, Chimaev's out of the fight, but we're working on it. Leave it with me. And I went to breakfast pretty stressed. And then by the end of breakfast, he comes to me and goes, hey, we're fighting this X, Y, and Z. See you at training tonight. We'll work some things. And then that's it. So I was working on some things. That's during that period is when I said to Johnny, I'll get the video to him. And then I kind of just went into a deep study and just unwind sort of thing, dude. Like I was just kind of chilling. But yeah, the opponent switch is what it is. You know, I want to say thank you to Ikram and the UFC and my team for making sure everything happened, because to not have fought would have been atrocious. I had flown all the way there. I put in all the work and, mate, I was there. You know, I was invested into fighting someone. So I'm glad. I thank everyone and all the parties involved that the fight happened. Cause that's how I earn bread for the family. So I'm very, very happy that the fight happened. And then obviously there's the fight night in Saudi and let's talk about it.
So how do you think, starting off with your fight, of course, like we got to start off with that. We'll go in some sort of reverse order, but how did you think your fight went? What were your thoughts? I know there's not much of a fight to try and analyze, and you of course were in it, but tell us from your perspective how that fight went.
Yeah, so firstly, you may have noticed, maybe I was a bit more in, and I say it because other people have pointed it out to me in the interviews I did today, that I may have been a bit more intense than I have been in maybe the walkout and stuff.
Yeah. You know,
I feel like a big part of that was because I was finding it very hard to G up because of how late the fight was.
Right.
So I was waking up like pretty as usual here, so around 8 o'clock in the morning, right? But I didn't walk out till about 12 midnight. So, and I tried napping that day, but I couldn't swing it, you know, trying to nap fight as hard. And I was really struggling to stay where I needed to, like motivation wise and energy wise, because I'd get tired. So I was like going like this up and down constantly throughout the warm up process. So when we finally got the call to walk, I was just in my own head, massively like G'ing myself up, just getting my headspace to where it needed to be for the fight. So that's maybe why I seemed more intense, because I was just like really just trying to combat that fatigue and tiredness.
Yeah. Those photos looked mean though. There's the one of you on the bus and then walking out, the camera behind you towards the ring. Those are some sick photos, bro.
Yeah, they're good. I find it funny that bus one, because I remember what I was listening to on the speakers there, because I had my speaker there.
What was it?
I was belting Celine Dion, dude. Just belting it. You know that song, that song like That's the way it is.
That is so funny, bro.
I was belting it. I was in a really good like 90s pop mix sort of go. So
cool. I'll never look at that photo the same again.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will. This is great. But in terms of the fight, I mentioned in a couple of interviews leading into it as well, is that I'm fortunate that I have a fight style. Our kind of fight style that we practice at the gym is to create a style that we can impose on our opponents so they have to deal with what we can bring. So it gives us a kind of flexible approach to fights. So and that was my game plan going in, just make him worry about my fight style and use my experience to lead me from there. You know, I said it, I'm sure I'll work it out, and I did.
You did. I remember a couple of interviews that you said this, and I don't think you actually meant it as any disrespect or a slight on Ikram, but you hadn't heard of him, and you clearly watched a couple of tapes on him since then, but you were just being honest about the situation and not necessarily trying to disrespect him, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like some of the reporters took it out of context and it came across disrespective. It was by no means. You know, I don't watch a ton of UFC.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I try my best to stay abroad of it because of our cast, but that's probably the only reason why I do it. Mm. And it's not like he's like been in the UFC for a long time, right?
So no.
I don't think it's any stretch to say that, like, I was, you know, I didn't know who he was. But then I did my research and I understood how well-rounded his skill set is and the challenge he could pose. Because the fight he had with Chimaev, whilst Chimaev knocked him out, it was competitive until that moment. Like, it was competitive. Yeah. But anyway, fight starts and I was feeling great, mate. Movement was crisp. I was light on my feet. I was sharp. And I could tell there was a few times every time I would faint in or I would jab in or I would push that gap a little bit. He'd always throw his left hand out.
Yeah.
I picked that up probably in the first minute. I got some hard reads and I saw him overreacting a lot every time I'd dash in. Because I do understand fast closing that gap.
Yeah.
So he was throwing that hand out a lot. So once I had cemented that down, I committed to the 1-2 over the top. Mm. Which is kind of why I put that 2 on the arc to go over the jab. And then, rest is history, really.
It was funny because when I did the recap video heading into your fight with him, and I watched a lot of his tape, especially against Khamzat Chimaev and his 2 fights in the UFC. I noticed that as well when he throws that jab, as strong as that jab is, because he's put down people with it, and I think his first fight in the UFC, not Dana White's contender series, but his first fight in the UFC, he put him down hard with that left jab. But when he throws it lazily or just not strong, he has a tendency to leave himself a little bit open. That's exactly how he got knocked out by Khamzat Chimaev. In fact, there were 2 or 3 different occasions in that fight with Khamzat where he threw that jab and he left himself a little bit open. So you were reading that in the moment.
Yeah. Like within the first minute I picked that up because he did it about 3 times. And I was obviously trying to get reads out of him, so I was fainting a lot. And then every time I'd jab, I'd commit to it and then see what he did. And within the minute, I kind of got a good tell on what he was doing.
I saw a couple of further breakdown videos of that as well. There was one really good one where I don't think – so people were saying that obviously you read him throwing that lead left jab, and that's when you were taking opportunity of coming in. But also he would raise his left leg as well. Did you notice that in the moment too? Because when you eventually got that right overhand hook, his left leg was up. So it was obviously not fully planted. And that's probably why your punch was even more impactful than otherwise it might have would have been. Like, did you notice him raising his left leg in the process?
Well, he was trying to tape kick me, you know, the entire fight. And I've seen in the tape that I've seen him, he's got a really good tape kick. Like a really good lead tape kick. And I didn't see him raising his knee when I went in. I just know the moment I committed in. And
for sure.
I parried his rear hand. You know, you can't see it from the angle of the UFC, but I don't know how someone else got it, but I saw it.
Yeah.
I parried the rear hand with my left hand and then come over the jab with my right whilst drifting left away from missing. Sketchy sometimes, but because you're kind of drifting into his power hand. But, you know, it worked to good effect this time at least.
100%. And then from that moment, what I really noticed is that you didn't just rush straight in. You did come in with the left right with the overhead kick. And because he was falling after that right, that overhead kick, I think it just grazed him or missed him. But you were not just rushing in. You were trying to be as careful as possible. Because how many fights have we seen where someone gets wobbled, the other guy will come in, and then he'll get caught, even though the other guy's wobbled, because that can happen, right?
Yeah, you got to be measured in that respect, because you also, like I, and again, like I said, I lent on my experience. I understood I had hurt him, and it's more about picking your shot. It's making sure you think of it as like, once I had wobbled him, I had the advantage. So my whole goal at that point is to keep the advantage. It's not about finishing or anything else. It's about keeping the advantage, and that can look in multiple different ways. And I'm glad that it did result in the finish, but that's my main approach when I hurt my opponents.
I messaged you, bro. That uppercut was filthy, man. It was, you talk about a perfectly timed, beautifully executed uppercut. That was it. And strangely, it was very similar to the one of Khamzat Chimaev against Ikram Eliskarov.
Both of them. I kid you not, in the fight, I had a flash of like seeing that clip with Chimaev.
Did you?
With the other guy. Yeah, dude.
I was going to ask.
I remembered it. Like, remember watching it. And maybe that's why I don't know. Maybe it played into it a bit, but.
That's crazy, bro.
It's weird, little things like that.
Hell yeah.
You know?
So that was the fight. Obviously, you're stoked afterwards. Like, it was such a cool moment for you. What's happening next? Like that, and I know you probably don't know yet. You tweeted recently, or you posted on Instagram that, hey, more news to come soon. I assume you still don't have that announcement yet, and that's going to be coming in the coming days or weeks or whatever it might be.
Well, it's tricky because they said if I want to be a replacement fighter, and I kind of jumped all over it straight away.
Yeah.
But I totally forgot that I got to finish my root canal. So... like two
so
days
what happened
before,
with that man? Yeah.
Two days before the fight, I developed a bad infection in my jaw, and I had to get two root canals like 2 days before I flew out.
Yeah.
And that's like a 3-stage process. So I only did the first stage before I left with the other two today and Friday. And mate, it hurts so much. Like,
I'm talking
pain levels like 9.5. That was the worst. I couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. It was an absolute nightmare. And I was worried that I was going to have to get the tooth taken out to get to the infection and how the hole would heal overseas. You know what I mean? And I didn't want to see a dentist in Saudi Arabia. You know, but it all worked out. Like by about midweek in Dubai when we got there, the infection settled down, so the pain kind of went away and I was able to pick up training again and stuff. So it all worked out, but that sucked. But I totally forgot that when I said about everything else. Like I got some teeth work done and stuff like that. But also, you know, once the adrenaline settled down and whatnot, like I'm no one's backup fighter, dude. Like,
hell yeah.
I'm not gonna sit in the on the sideline waiting for crumbs. Like when I fight either one of those guys, that's the fight the UFC is going to give me, and I'm going to go hunting. Like they're going to enter my crosshairs and you know, that's what I'll do. So I think I like that approach much more than, you know,
definitely
like I said before.
But I know that, you know, you said that you want to take your family on a holiday. You fought two fights pretty close together, which obviously it puts a toll on your team, it puts a toll on your family. So is there any intention on your side to try and make it to UFC 305 in Perth in August? Or you're going to be there either way, but whether you're fighting is a different question.
Yeah, I'll be there, but I won't be fighting. I'm probably going to look to fight at the end of the year, October, November, December. I'd like to get one more in, especially because I kind of went unscathed. It's a good time for me to rest my mind. Fighting is stressful. Like fight week stressful. The fight day itself is very stressful. So I think even though my body's in good shape, I think it might be good for me just to unwind a little bit from that, like let my nervous system chill. Because like you said, from February when I fought Costa, it's kind of dragged out into just one long camp. And I know the team as well had to push back a lot of things. Like we had certain guys that could have fought that decided not to because all the coaches are focusing on me with my camp.
Right.
I know the coaches wanted to go over their families and they couldn't. And same with myself. So I think we all deserve a little bit of time off just to see where we're at. And you know what? October or November, that's not that far away realistically. By the time I go away with my family and stuff, I'll be back in camp before I know it. So
yeah,
I think just unwinding a little bit for now is the play.
And are you just kind of, you're going to wait and see what happens with Drickers fighting Izzy? Obviously, Sean Strickland is in the wings and it seems like he's more willing to wait and he feels like he's already earned that title shot against, whether it's against Izzy, who he's beaten, or Drickers, who he had a close loss to, who many people thought that he won. So is your decision, like your decision to who to fight or who you think you're going to fight, obviously it's dependent on that, but also might be dependent on what Sean thinks, because a lot of people, including myself, are saying the obvious fight to make is you against Sean for the title opportunity. But it doesn't feel like Sean wants to do that.
It's tricky. You know, I've never really focused on who I'm going to fight. I really, I just make sure I'm in a prime position so that when the UFC give me a name, you know, I can go up there and bash him.
Hell yeah. Dude, we're all stoked for you. Honestly, it was awesome seeing you get that finish. I would be remiss, though, if we moved on from this, because many people asked me to ask you, what were with those interview questions in the post-fight press conference? Some of those journos, man, the questions that they asked you, like they started leaning that way. And then the very last question was just like, man, if you fought Hamza Chimaev, could have been different. You might've lost. What were with those questions?
they're just stupid questions. It's like, I'm going to be honest with you. I love them because it allows me to like, take the piss a little bit. No, it's kind of like ask stupid questions, get stupid answers. And I find it fun. I feel bad for the fighters though, they get flustered with that sort of stuff because, you know, like do your job better, right? I understand the reporters is trying to get some hype with like the Russians and everybody else on that side of the world. Bit of hype and noise and yada, yada, yada. But come on, dude, do your job better.
No, I agree. And like, hold on, it's not, you're not the one that pulled out of the fight. I mean, he did for legitimate reasons. So it's a weird question to ask.
Yeah, it's almost like they're making it out like I ducked him.
That's what I thought.
I just did a 12-week camp to fight the dude. What are you talking about?
And also, what a lot of people didn't know is that you had that surgery and you were very sick as you were flying to Dubai to eventually head to Saudi Arabia. So that was at the time when the Khamzat fight was on.
Yeah. It wasn't that bad. Like, I was just a lot of pain, really. Like, it hurts so much. T-pain sucks, dude. Oh, sucks.
For sure. That was just, it was so stupid. And you kept laughing and you're like, I don't know, if I had wheels, I'd be a bike. Like, what the hell?
Dude, you know what? That didn't translate well. I got no laughs in the crowd then. Like, it did not translate well.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, well, I think maybe it's an Aussie thing. All the Aussies get my humor to a degree. Like, it didn't translate because we had a translator there, so like it didn't translate well. But I thought it was funny.
I thought you handled it pretty well. It was a funny clapback. But yeah, man, stoked for you. Stoked for your win. Let's see what happens. Like, let's see what happens at UFC 305. Let's see what Sean potentially decides to do. But before we move on from that UFC fight night in Saudi Arabia, I just wanted to ask you as a general thing, what did you think of the card, of what you saw at least? Because, of course, you were preparing. But did you see any of the other fights? Do you have any comments about the fights with, like, Pavlovich and Volkov or any of the other ones?
So I'm obviously going to touch on these pretty lightly. I'm only talking from what I saw whilst trying to warm up in the back room. I haven't rewatched the whole card. Don't intend to. So don't get your hopes up, guys. But from what I saw, and I do watch a fair bit of them, depending on where out my preparation is like how many fights it is from the main event. But you know what? I'll start with Odzemir. That was such a cold cut, killer knockout, dude.
Brutal,
like, that
bro.
Dude is, I am the biggest fan of Odzemir, man. Like, he is so cool. Like, the way, he's just cool, dude. He's so stoic and nonchalant about anything. He just went in there with absolute confidence. It's like, I can't help but get the feeling like he's just, it was just like, he just went to work. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, dude just went to work, and like that uppercut when Johnny was already like
brutal
on the floor, just sent Johnny to the shadow realm, dude. Like,
I feel so bad for that dude. Every time he gets knocked out, someone said it's like a Looney Tunes knockout. I feel really bad, but it's true.
I hate bringing it up. Have you seen it? I'm laughing thinking about it. Have you seen when he before he was in the UFC when he gets knocked out and he stands up and he gets shinned again and he goes full limp like stiff ragdoll, then gets back up again like three times. Like, it is wild. Now, I'm not taking a dig at Johnny Walker. I think he is a sensational, outstanding fighter. I think you shouldn't wink at the camera as much as he does, but right, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that was a great win for Odzemir. That was classy. It was just a great win.
Yeah.
Shara, his fight, I don't know. He's a middleweight, so I'm not going to harp on too much about him. The guy he fought, Trisoli, whatever it is, dude was a punching bag. Guy gassed after about 30 seconds. And it might have something to do with he was supposed to fight Ikram the week before.
No, so he was meant to fight Ikram. He went through the weight cut similar to, I think both he and Ikram were like either in the middle of their weight cut when they were meant to fight or towards the back end of it. Then obviously that had to stop. And then Ikram signed on to fight you, so he went over. And then they only called Trikoli, I think it was 3 days before the fight that was like that was meant to happen with Shara and whoever his opponent was, which obviously got cancelled. So they called him on 3 days' notice to fly over. He arrived at 1 a.m. and had to obviously cut weight. So that dude was spent before the fight even began. So I think that's what contributed to that.
Okay. Yeah, because that dude was like gassed from about 30 seconds in.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then he was kind of just a punching bag after that. So not much to say on that fight.
Yeah.
Kelvin. What do I say? I like the guy. I really do. And I'm always in his corner, to be honest. Like, I really like him, but.
You are, yeah.
Mate, he did D-Rod dirty.
Yeah.
Dirty, man. Like, for one, okay, so firstly, Kelvin always surprises the hell out of me. Dude rocks up. I thought he looked so out of shape and, like, unwell. At face-offs and whatnot, and then he fights like he always does. Like, he's just he's just one of those dudes. But mate, the fight was supposed to be at 170. The fight happened at 185. Okay, that is 15 pounds difference.
He couldn't even do a catch weight at 180, which is what D-Rod asked for. It had to do 185 back in middleweight. Like, what's the point?
Yep. And it's such a hard position. It's like, what's D-Rod going to do? Not take the fight. But that means he doesn't get paid. You know what I mean? Like, he needs this fight. I don't know. It was dirty by D-Rod. I've always been on the stance that, like, if you don't make weight, you're kind of like, what's wrong with you? Right? You know the terms and conditions when you sign the contract 12 weeks before the bout.
Yeah.
Okay. There were dudes rocking up 3 days before a fight still making weight. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's how I feel. Still big fan of Kelvin, but that was dog.
Well, it absolutely had an impact in the fight, right? When you don't, like they were saying, obviously he wasn't eating. I'm sorry, when I talk about Daniel Rodriguez, he was eating like he was cutting weight, preparing for a 170 fight. So that affects how he performs in the fight. Kelvin, he's always had a hard shin, but he was clearly taking the shots easier, clearly was the bigger guy, especially when the takedowns happen. It affected the performance. And otherwise, we might have seen D-Rod win that fight. Now, apparently, D-Rod, he got a new USC contract from it, a six-fight contract. I think he got 30% of Kelvin's purse. So I think he's been able to negotiate it in his favor, but he still has a loss on his record because of it. I personally think Kelvin needs to pick a freaking lane. Are you middleweight or are you welterweight and stick to it?
And it's kind of like, how much can I pay you to lose sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
It's you know what it would be like? It's like me saying, hey, D-Rod, I'll fight you at 170. Yeah. And then getting the day off and be like, psych!
Yeah.
185 it is, dude. Because I'm walking into the octagon at like 210.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Mm. Like, so I don't know what Kelvin's walking in at.
That's but a good point.
I know welterweights don't get up to 210 in off season. Like I'm walking into the octagon at 210, lean, fit, strong.
So he must have been at least like 215, maybe. Maybe two closer to 220. Right. 220. That's insane, bro.
Right. I know welterweights, like, they try to, in off-season, they try to, like, who was it? Usman said he doesn't get bigger than 190. And he looks like a big welterweight.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, absolutely. It had an impact on the fight. I feel really bad for D-Rod. And all things considered, I thought he performed pretty well. But he's fighting someone that was clearly heavier and didn't have to go through that brutal weight cut. So was able to take shots easier. That I feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm. Pavlovich Volkov, that one I didn't watch as much because like that was fight before me, so
yeah,
I was pretty heavy into my warm up at that point. But I saw Volkov utilizing his range and reach very well.
Yeah,
you saw Sergey having trouble closing that gap, and that's kind of how the fight played out.
Yeah,
in my opinion, from what I saw,
it went completely opposite to the way that a lot of us thought it would. And honestly, man, like I don't know what's been happening with Pavlovich. It seems like he really struggles when he was clearly looking for the knockout. He even said that the whole fight he was just hunting for it and it never happened. And it seems like when it doesn't, he struggles. His game looks to be pretty one-dimensional in that regard. And I don't know what he does next because he's had two losses now, one against Aspinall, which obviously happened in a bit more brutal fashion, one now against Volkov. It's hard to say. It's hard to say what Pavlovich does. And he was someone that we all thought could have easily been the next champion. He was the favorite heading into the Aspinall fight, and then he got knocked out.
Mm.
I don't know, man. I don't know what Pavlovich does.
I think his setups a little bit. I think if he can work on his setups and just kind of lure his opponents into some traps, you know, instead of kind of just bullying through it sort of thing. He's kind of a bit oonga boonga at the moment.
Yeah.
Which is fine because dude hits like an absolute truck. And I shook his hand, dude. His hand enveloped mine. Like he's a big guy. He's a big guy.
Is he taller than you or is he?
Yeah, like, he's tall too. Like he didn't look super tall because of he was fighting Volkov, but he's tall. And
I was
going
to say because Volkov's freaking massive, but and he made Pavlovich look small.
Yeah.
Far out. But good win for Volkov. Honestly, like very interested to see what he does. The heavyweight division's looking very interesting at the moment. We obviously have Aspinall versus Blades soon in Manchester. And obviously Jones is going to be fighting Miocic at some stage. So let's see what happens with the heavyweight division. But overall, I thought it was actually a pretty fun night. And for the fights that you saw, what did you think?
Yeah, they weren't bad. I thought it was a good card. I think it was, you know, I'm very fortunate to be on, you know, making history, being the first main event in Saudi Arabia. So to be able to do that, I'm very privileged to be able to do that. And I thought there were some good fights to have on the first fight, like on a fight night card in Saudi Arabia. That was free on ABC as well. Like, couldn't have gone better.
Yeah, hell yeah. So next up, obviously, like we're turning around very quickly with another UFC card. Are you good? Do you need to go to the bathroom? I'm having these checks. You do?
I do. But I think I can get through this next bit because maybe.
You reckon? All right.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you want to do the UFC 3 predictions then?
Yep. And then I'll.
All right. Let's start off. This is a look. I know that there's been changes with this card, with the Connor thing. But I still think on paper, this is probably a better card than what it was before. We have some banger fights starting off with, and I don't know why this one seems to be going under the radar. We have Ian Machado Garry against Michael Venom Page. So Ian Garry, he's undefeated, 14 wins, no losses. He has wins over Jeff Neal with a split decision, win over Neil Magny, win over Daniel Rodriguez, speaking of him, with a TKO. Then MVP, very new in the UFC, of course. He has that win over Kevin Holland and then everything that he did in Bellator. How do you see this fight playing out?
Mate, I have no idea. I have no idea.
It's a hard one.
Like, whenever Venom Page is in a fight, because of his style, it's so hard to predict what happens. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see. I don't know what we're going to see.
It's a really unpredictable one because, like, Ian Garry, I probably would say that Ian Garry he should be the favorite, and I haven't checked the odds. Michael Page is so bloody quick though, and we saw them in that Kevin Holland fight. He's so awkward and he can hit people out of nowhere. He can close distance so freaking fast. But I'm leaning towards Ian Garry. I think Ian Garry genuinely is the best prospect in that division. I know a lot of people don't like him, but I think he will get it done. Even though Michael Page doesn't seem to be slowing down, Ian is much younger. I don't know. He seems to be very hungry to win that. I'm going to say Ian Garry. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'll go Garry too. I think we could see him utilizing his wrestling a bit.
Yeah.
I think we see him mixing it up, and I think that leads him like an advantage.
I would say that's probably one of his best paths to victory. He can't just stand there and trade with MVP, but let's see what happens. The next fight, what did this fight start off as? It started off as, this is my memory, Jamahal Hill against Khalil Rountree. Rountree has that, you know, doping thing that happened to him. So it's Jamahal Hill against Carlos Ullberg. And then Jamahal Hill gets a knee injury, so it's Carlos Ullberg against Anthony Smith, and now it's Anthony Smith against Roman Dolidze, who's not even at that weight class. He's moving up for middleweight. What the hell? This is the weirdest fight ever. But Anthony Smith against Roman Dolidze, who do you reckon?
Mate, I'm gonna have to say Anthony Smith.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, I reckon Anthony Smith by decision. Just because I'm imagining like a heavy set. Dolidze was kind of heavy and slow in a middleweight. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine him getting faster as a light heavy, right? So, no. So.
And look, credit to him for stepping up in weight on pretty short notice, but especially given his loss against Nassadine, and I know that was a majority decision. His loss against Marvin Vettori as well. Mm. I don't know how he stacks up against light heavyweight. I really don't. So, I'm going to go with Anthony Smith as well. Co-main, Brian Ortega, Diego Lopez. This came out of nowhere after the Conor McGregor and Chandler cancellation. This is going to be a banger. Brian Ortega, 16 wins, 3 losses. He just had the win against Yair Rodriguez before he obviously lost against Yair due to the shoulder injury. Diego Lopez, he's on a bit of a tear right now. He had a win against Sadiq Youssef, UFC 300, super win against impressive. Pat Sabatini. He has a win against Gavin Tucker. So, Diego Lopez, fun, exciting fighter. Brian Ortega fighting him. I think Brian Ortega said that he wants to move up and wait after this fight, which is very interesting. But who do you think wins?
You know what? It's hard to say. Like I'm gonna lean towards Ortega just because of the experience and because Ortega's been in fights like this before. Okay, yep. Lopez is obviously riding a real high, super explosive, aggressive fight. I thought his last win was amazing and it really highlighted just how dangerous this guy is at finishing people. But Ortega's a hard guy to finish. Like he's one of those guys that is very hard to finish. And if you don't finish him, he kind of takes you into deep waters. So that's where I see this fight going.
Yeah, I don't know if Diego Lopez is going to be able to knock Brian Ortega out. And my prediction is going to be submission for Brian Ortega. I think he can get it done. Like to have someone get so close to choking out Alexander Volkanovski, right? To do what he did against Yair Rodriguez with the arm triangle. I think he can do it. And maybe put a bit of a pause on the hype train for Diego Lopez, but anything can happen in this bloody game.
Yep.
And finally, the main event, the fight that everyone's now looking forward to. These two guys are stepping up on short notice. Alex Pereira against Jiří Procházka for the light heavyweight championship. Alex Pereira, 10 wins, 2 losses. He just had the KO win against Jamahal Hill, also at UFC 300. He beat Jiří before that with his TKO. He beat Jan Blachowicz before that, but obviously that one was a much closer decision. And then we have Jiří Procházka just coming off the win against Alexander Rakic via TKO. 30 wins, 4 losses, though before that he, of course, lost to Pereira, as I mentioned. Rob, this is going to be a very, very fun, interesting fight. Who do you got?
I'd be remiss to go against Pereira. The dude is so consistent. So consistent.
Yeah.
Now, in their first pairing, I had Jiří because I thought the unorthodox strikes were going to lend itself to great effect against Pereira. And they did.
Yeah.
Until Pereira knocked him out. Okay. I think the same thing. I think Jiří's unorthodox strikes are going to land on Pereira. The thing is, though, Pereira's just consistent. He's so consistent. Yeah. He's such a safe bet. And Pereira, like in the stand-up world, I don't think anyone gets close to him. Dude's fought hurt. Dude's been in deep waters. He understands the striking game to such a degree. I think it's so hard to count him out against anyone if there's going to be striking involved. So, I'm going to lean towards Pereira just because of how consistent he is, just because of how dangerous he is.
Mm.
I like Jiří a lot, kind of silently rooting for him because I just like, the dude's wild. the good
he did another
of
one
crazy,
of his,
you know what I mean?
He's training in 3 days in the darkness, no food, just water. He did another one of those for this fight.
Yep.
Crazy dude.
I am all for it, dude. He's a good kind of crazy, but right? The good kind.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Johnny Walker's kind of the other end. I think Pereira would be the favorite, but that's my opinions.
Look, when this fight was first announced, my first thought instantly went to Pereira knocking him out. Only because, Jiří is a very fantastic fighter, right? And he showed against Rakic that he still has it. However, if we all recall how that fight actually went, Rakic won the first round. He really did piece up Jiří in the first round. Mm-hmm. And he just can't fight like that against Pereira. He's going to get knocked out. He can't go in with reckless abandon because fighting against Rakic is one thing. Fighting against Pereira with his left hook is a completely different ballgame. You've already been knocked out by the dude. You can't just go in guns blazing. And I just have this feeling that that's just how he fights. He's that Czech samurai warrior. And I feel like he's going to go in and maybe at some, we saw that in his previous fight with Pereira. He might actually go in, think like he's doing really, really well, getting a lot of punches in, and then Pereira comes out of nowhere with the knockout. I think that's exactly how it's going to go again in the third round. I'm going to give him another round. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think one of Jiří's weaknesses is his leg defense. I think he gets leg kicked a bit too much in every fight. Mm. Especially against guys that can leg kick, like in that Rakic fight, we saw it really start to play an effect in that fight.
Yep.
No one does it better than Pereira. Like,
his kicks are so good, man.
Yeah, so, like I said, I stand by what I said.
Yeah. Well, I think both of us are picking Pereira for this fight. Let us know, of course, what you think in the comments below about UFC 303 and all the fights taking place this weekend, Saturday US time, Sunday our time. Rob, before we talk about the game that you want to talk about, are you good?
No. Be right back.
I have these mental checks now, and it's very funny because before he would bring it up, and now I'm just triple checking. It makes it easier for me to edit the video as well. I tell you what, though, going back to Rob and who he should fight next, I really think Sean Strickland needs to just suck it up and fight Rob. It's the fight to make. They've never fought before. They both have very strong claims to be getting a title shot or at least a title contender's shot. Sean beat Paulo, but Rob also beat Paulo, right? And Rob's fight against Paulo was much more exciting. And then Rob obviously did what he did against Ikram, who was the biggest prospect in the division. I think they have to make that fight. I think it has to be Rob versus Sean Strickland, because if it's not, in all likelihood, if Sean waits, and definitely if Sean waits and Izzy wins, easy, you're going to put Sean in there. But if that happens, it'll probably be Rob against Nasruddin, but it's still going to be a title contender shot. Anyways. All right, bro. It is time. I know that you haven't played it yet, but this is something that we've been talking about for weeks, if not months now. You're back now in Australia. Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree, came out while you were in Dubai, I believe. I know that you haven't got the opportunity to play it. The reviews have been fantastic. Shadow of the Erdtree, 94 on OpenCritic. It is literally the highest rated DLC ever. Ever. I've been playing it. I played it during the review period. I've finished it completely. What do you have anything, like, kind of thoughts on Shadow of the Erdtree before we start talking about some of the mixed reviews on Steam? Like, where's your head at with the DLC?
I haven't touched it. I am all for it, though. From what I understand, there's a whole bunch more weapons, new spells, new areas. So I'm looking forward to getting into it.
I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but as I said, I have been playing it. And it's genuinely fantastic. I don't know why they said it's the size of Limgrave. This thing is huge, man. You're talking, if you take your time with it, at least 40 to 60 hours of more content, more weapons, boss fights. The exploration is so bloody good. The way that they've done, like, they've used verticality, they used depth. There's always a new freaking path to go to get to certain areas of the map. You've really got to look for it. It's just fantastic. The biggest slight that people have had against it is performance on PC, and I played PS5, so I'm not too sure about that. But also, people are saying it's too hard, Rob. So there is actually a mixed rating on Steam right now because a lot of people are saying that it's too hard. Now, knowing you, playing a lot of FromSoft games and DLC, is that valid to say this is too hard, or is this exactly what it's meant to be?
If you, brother, if you... found the game too hard and you went up onto the Steam page and you wrote a little review going, "Man, it's too hard." Like, fuck. What? Mate, I have absolutely zero respect for you. Like, zero. None. You don't exist to me. You are practically the rocks in my garden. You were just part of the scenery. You were part of the foliage. You were nothing to me because you are pathetic. Pathetic.
It doesn't make any sense, bro. Like, this, not only is it a FromSoft DLC and they've always traditionally been hard, but they said from the get-go, this is endgame stuff. And they know they have people with overpowered builds. They're over-leveled, whatever it might be. If they're releasing a DLC, they can't make it too easy for people to just walk through. There has to be a difficulty there.
It's not that. It's not even just that. It's just like, you're complaining that it's hard. Go play something else.
Yeah.
Like, or be better. Like, better yourself.
Get good.
Better yourself.
But it's true.
Get stronger. Yeah. Get more resilient. Yeah. Like, hardship makes you better.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you found the game too hard and you took the time to write a negative review just to exclamate how much of a bitch you are, I don't know if how upset I am about it is coming across. Like, utter, I don't consider you people. I take away all your rights, dude. Like, you're nothing to me. Like, if you found it too hard, that's fine. Just don't play it, okay?
Yeah.
You don't. But if you took the time to write a review saying it's too hard, brother.
No. This is the thing that I'll go back
problem.
To.
You are the problem.
It's meant to be hard, but I do not think at any stage the Shadow of the Erdtree gets unfair, right? Like, I played games and I fought bosses before. I'm like, what they're doing right now is not fair. It's bullcrap. But never did I feel that way with Shadow of the Erdtree. If I encountered a boss that was hard and I kept dying, which happens, of course, because it is meant to be a very hard DLC, you learn, you change your build, and you get better. And if you want to suck it up, because there was one boss fight, and I won't mention which one it was, I completed the whole game without using, or the whole expansion without using any spirits or any summons. I had to use one for this one particular boss fight, but it's in the game. Like they honestly, there's an argument there that they've balanced this DLC with the use of summons in mind. I know you're laughing, but it's true.
Yeah, you're a bitch.
Hey, Rob, I'm not. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. So, I played the game. There was a 3-hour gameplay session. I flew over to Sydney for, right, and one of the bosses in there had no summons. Like, you know how you can sometimes have set NPC summons before you enter? There was none as you would enter the boss arena. Playing the release version that we got, or the review version, there were two. And I think they understood that people and people that were playing the previews were dying a lot to that one boss. So they added in the two NPC summons. So they're there for you to use. If you can't do it on your own, then use them. At least they're providing you that option. But then you have people like Rob that say you're a bitch.
No, and let me preface, right? Like, yeah. I am not a god at these sort of games. Whilst I love hard games and permadeath and kind of look down on anyone that doesn't play like that. Sorry. I am a victim like everybody else. There are some games I have had to come to terms with that I'm just too shit to play.
Yeah,
like, and I'm happy, like, but I'll die on my my shield, like, sort of thing. You know what I mean? I'll just suck it up and take the criticism like everybody else, because I understand you live and die by the sword, right? But in terms of Elden Ring, like, you have the bell of summoning, don't you? Like, you can just summon. There are so many summons that are just stupid strong, like stupid strong.
Mimic tier being one of the top ones. Yeah,
like they like mimic tier, and then like there's heaps of like niche ones you can play that are just fun to use. Like, I don't know. The game's not hard, especially if you just go on Google and you play like a min-maxed build. It's
all about honestly, dude, it's all about the builds. Like me, and there is an aspect with Shadow of the Erdtree. You have to pick up these things called Skadutree fragments, and they make it easier for you to take damage and also let you dish out more damage specifically in that area. So there is a level of you need to make sure you explore and pick up all those things to be as powerful as possible before you take on the harder bosses. If you're walking straight to the boss fights without picking up any of those things, you're going to get your ass handed to you. But that's intentional. Level up all that stuff. But also, you would probably have to change your build around. You can't go into some of these bosses with a crap build, and nor should you. Like, that's not how the game is meant to be played. You're meant to be changing and experimenting. Pick up a min-max build. Look up a YouTube guide. There's plenty of builds out there that are going to help you out.
To my new playthrough, I'm going to go just pure sword and board quality.
Okay.
Like, and it's going to make the game a nightmare.
You are a sucker for punishment, bro. I genuinely are.
I'm either going to become a paragon or end up quitting the game. That's it. That's all I'm playing. Sword and ball quality. Like, I can't wait. I cannot wait. Yeah.
Dude, I'm looking forward to seeing what you think in the next podcast.
You know what I'm
tempted
to download is like a hardcore mode.
Don't. You don't need that. It's hard enough as it is. You don't.
I just feel like it would just... Don't you get like a tingle in your balls when you're about to lose a character of about 20 hours, mate? Like,
no.
I think there is, like, I am slowly developing like a bad Massachusetts sort of personality,
dude,
with gaming.
I could not imagine getting to the DLC Shadow of the Erdtree after playing through the whole base game and dying to one of those bosses and losing my character. That would be a horrible sinking feeling.
I'm so interested in it, but
no, don't.
Like, and it, I guess, like, we'll transition that onto what I've been playing, watching, and stuff. Because I've been just smashing. So the whole 2 weeks I was away, I was thrashing Monster Hunter World.
Oh yeah,
thrashing
sick.
It. And dude, some of those end game bosses are stupid. Like, there is nothing worse, bro, than spending 35 minutes trying to kill something, only to cart three times by the end, like only to lose the fight. Like, there is, like, I kid you not, like 40 minute fights.
That's insane.
To just die and have to start again. Like,
that's insane.
Yeah.
But why though? Are they just like, they have so much health? Like, why is it like
that? They have a ton of health and they're just hard to fight. They're just like, you have to be on because they hit so freaking hard, and they have a ton of health, a ton of health.
That's why I prefer Elden Ring.
And there's the combat style is very skill based. Like there's a lot of combos you need to know, a lot of positioning. So there's it doesn't have a dodge roll mechanic. It does have a dodge roll mechanic, but the iframes are minuscule. So you can't use it defensively that well.
Right.
You more use it as a positioning mechanism. Right. So it kind of like, it takes a while to get adjusted to, especially if you've come from a game like Elden Ring or Dark Souls, to get used to that sort of thing. But yeah, it gets hard as shit.
Couldn't do it, man. Not 40-minute boss fights. Like the thing that I like about Elden Ring is that if you die a lot, you're dying a lot in maybe 1 to 2, 3 minute boss fights. You know what I mean? Yep. So you can keep trying and trying and trying very quickly. 40 minutes, that I would just log off for the night if I died.
Yeah,
no way.
That's kind of why I'm burnt out now. So I'm not playing it right now.
Yeah.
Like I got like 200 hours on my character or something, but
yeah,
I'm not playing anymore because I just don't. The idea, because sometimes you got to do the same boss multiple times to farm items to build the gear you want, and I just don't have it in me to keep hitting the same 30-minute boss over and over and over. Like not anymore, anyway. Like I said, I was spending like 8 hours a day every day with me mate playing it. When I was in Dubai, dude, I was playing so much, and it was a great ride. But I'm burnt out. I'm gonna put it down for a bit.
That's why UFC can't do embedded with you, bro. Because all you're doing is sitting and playing video games.
I kid you not. They call me up and they're like, "Bro, you doing anything today?" And I say, "Nah." You know what I did yesterday? I'm doing that today too. And they're like, "No worries. Let me know if you go out anywhere." That's why they don't get any footage ever. They hate me.
That's so funny. I tell you what though, touching on that, I watched the ESPN video breakdown of Ikram and you before your fight. That was pretty fantastic, man. That was cool. They came to your place and they recorded you and your family. I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah. I remember seeing that, like the clip with my kids and stuff, and it was like, it's the best. Like,
Yeah, hell yeah. Were you playing anything else, by the way, when you were in Dubai?
No, just Monster Hunter World. But like, there's so many things I want to get into now. So like, right, I was talking to you just before this, like, as much as I want to play Shadow of the Erdtree, I'm really itching for Dragon's Dogma 2. I want to make a sword and board, dude. Like just pure
okay.
Sword
You're
going to
go back and play it.
Yep. Just sword and board. Just going to start again, sword and board only, become a parry guy.
Okay.
I don't know why. Like, that's how I am. Like, if I decide I want to play a certain build, I go through all my games, remaking characters of that build. Like, so Dragon's Dogma now. I'm going to go play that.
Right, so are you going to play Dragon's Dogma 2 before Shadow of the Erdtree?
Yeah.
That's that's wild, bro. I just don't feel like playing.
Yeah, I just don't feel like it right now. Like, I'm a Flavors of the Month dude. You know what I mean? Like, I really want to get in the Dragon's Dogma 2 and just sword and board things. I want to go parry ogres and just smash
all
it.
All right. That's crazy,
and
then, man.
And in saying that, there's also like Caves of Cud released a massive UI update, and I'm so keen to jump back into that, but after Dragon's Dogma, I reckon.
Fair enough.
And then, Dwarf's Fortress is dropping Adventure Mode. They've dropped the Adventure Mode beta, and that the full version of that's coming out in a couple of months, and that's wild as well. Like, there's so much to do. And then, I want to make a new run in Cyberpunk. I still haven't even started Phantom Liberty.
I want to do that as well. That's definitely on my list for sure.
And then there's the Shadow of the Erdtree, you know? So, but think about this. Like, if I play my backlog of games that I want to play now, I'll have Shadow of the Erdtree to play when I'm ready. So I've got that in my back pocket, dude. Like,
true.
You know what I mean?
I think it's wild that you just don't want to play it now, given how good it is.
Yeah, but like, I just don't feel like it.
fair enough, man. Because that's all I've been doing. Speaking about what I've been playing, last few weeks have just been Shadow of the Erdtree, exploring, defeating the bosses, man. It's been a hell of a lot of fun. Like, they absolutely nailed it, man. Don't take any stock of the mixed reviews on Steam. It's hard, but it's meant to be. The exploration is more satisfying than in the base game. The side quests are fantastic, and all the lore implications as well. I don't want to spoil it.
Listen to me. Hardship makes the triumph hardship makes the triumph. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's good for you. It's good for
you. Yeah. Like, for sure.
The harder it is, the better, the tastier the victory, right? Like,
that is what we've been watching, playing, and reading, of course. And last segment, as always, viewer questions. If you have any viewer questions, let us know in the comments below. We're going to be starting off with a member on the channel. Thank you to Dane and Eddie, or Eddie, for becoming a member. First one, Rob, and I wanted to ask you this as well. I'm very curious. Quote, also Rob, what did you think of the new gloves? Some say they're cursed because there's been no KOs, but you helped break the curse. What did you think of the new USC gloves? Are they good?
Not really. I don't really like them very much.
Really? But, why?
Yeah. Because they feel crap.
In what way? What do you mean?
I can't explain. They're just not as comfortable. Like, I need to wear a size up as well because I think they're a smaller fit. That's kind of it.
Is it the material or the shape or a combination of both?
Yeah, the material feels different. The shape feels different. I just don't like it. I just don't like it. UFC gloves had like a unique feel. These ones kind of feel more mainstream. I don't like it very much.
Right.
But nobody asked me.
But that being said, man, all right, you got your knockout with it. Maybe this is something to it, right? I've been told that there's less material.
Yeah, maybe. Well, they are technically lighter.
Well, there you go. So maybe you're going to get some good luck with them. I'm just saying, maybe. But it's interesting to know that you don't really like them.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we've got at Pinpad Prompts. Can you ask Rob on the next pod whether that uppercut was a shot he saw in the Khamzat fight, or was it just something he threw in the moment? Yeah, I think you've answered that already beforehand.
Answered that.
I think that's
one,
funny,
mate.
Bro. Next up, we've got at HM Cars SOA. Great win for Rob, and loved how the channel was run this month. Thank you, man. Here are some random questions for the podcast. For Johnny, what is your most difficult moment in gaming, e.g. hardest boss? And for Rob, I know they're completely different scenarios, but do you take any of your experiences in MMA into gaming, e.g. somehow applying your ring IQ into a difficult boss fight, etc.? Rob, we'll start with you.
I was thinking about this. Because like I said just a second ago, I was putting like 8 hours a day in the Monster Hunter world. I feel like my brain is geared, like after playing that much Monster Hunter, in trying to look at boss patterns, trying to find openings for punishment, trying to avoid positional damage. Like I feel like my mind is geared to looking at an obstacle and dissecting it in such a way that I can start to find advantages. Okay. And that's exactly what I did in the fight as well. Within a minute of the fight, I saw he was just left that left arm out. He was using that very defensively, going backwards. He was giving me the tell and the reads. And then I went in and exploited that. How much of that is truth? Who knows? But it was something I thought about in the week leading into it. And I definitely attribute to how I fight mechanically or even just my approach in life to video games a big deal because my brain is geared differently.
Like, dude, there's absolutely been studies that have shown people that play games consistently have better reaction time and stuff like that. So I believe it. And that means you need to add in video games to your training regime. 8 hours a day, Shadow of the Erdtree, Monster Hunter.
Dude, you don't see it. Like, I played so many games when I was away. I had to get massaged to fix my back because the chair was crap. Like, I was getting massaged just to keep me gaming, man. Like,
that's so funny.
My priorities got blended.
You saying that is just wild, knowing what you did against Ikram. But to answer the question for me, honestly, man, after playing Shadow of the Erdtree, I won't name the boss, but the end boss in Shadow of the Erdtree is genuinely the hardest boss that I've ever fought. Genuinely. It's night and day difference.
Can I ask you something? Have you fought the Nameless King in Dark Souls 3?
No, I haven't. But I haven't played that many games, like being honest.
Because that made me like reassess who I was as a person. That was bullshit. That's the first game.
Okay.
The first boss, I actually stopped playing the game.
Wow.
Yeah, like for a good 8 months, year. I stopped and then came back to it and started again and had much more success when I matured a little bit. But
Yeah, look, if I had played it, I probably would agree with you, but at least for the games that I played, definitely that one boss from Shadow of the Erdtree.
Bro, have you played Terraria?
No, I haven't played Terraria.
Oh, bro.
Empress, I don't play the games you play, bro.
Empress of Light in Master Mode in Terraria, when you're trying to get her special weapon, like you're trying to fight her during the day and she can one-shot you, bro.
That's crazy.
Next level hard. People in the comments, back me up here. That's next level stupid hard. That was bull crap.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Next question is from at CheeseNips9294. Jesus Christ. Does Rob live stream regularly? If so, what account does he use? I found his Twitch and YouTube, but he hasn't used them in years. Rob, what are you doing? You live streaming? What's going on?
Nah, the only thing that I'm doing online is the podcast, Emma Marcade. You can find us on YouTube. Please subscribe. that's it. Like and I think moving forward, if I do stream or anything, it'll be through this channel. So yeah. You're in the right place.
Hell yeah. And the last question, I'm very curious about this question. And I thought about doing a separate video on it, but at Jody Whammer, if Khamzat comes back, where does he sit as far as a title contender fight? Do you want to answer this first or should I?
Mate, it's not something I've thought about because obviously he had his chance and he missed it. But like I said, I'm not one to pick fights. I'm going to speak to the UFC. We're going to talk. We're going to throw around some ideas and see what happens.
Yeah, fair. I mean, for me, he still hasn't beat an actual middleweight yet. He beat a Kamaru Usman who moved up on short notice, and it wasn't that convincing of a win. He needs to find an actual middleweight. At least, I would like to see at least two fights before we even talk about title contention. And it was meant to be you, and it didn't happen. He got sick, I can understand that, but that doesn't mean he just gets to walk into a title shot, especially when you and Sean Strickland both have legitimate claims. So he needs, in my eyes, I would like to see two fights from him in middleweight. UFC is probably going to give him one, but let's see what happens. Maybe him against Nassourdin Imavov. I think that could be a good fight. But Rob, that is episode 44 of the MMRcade podcast. Do you have any closing thoughts before we end it out?
That is a solid comeback episode.
It is.
You know, I think that's a really solid comeback. I want to say thank you to everyone. I want to thank yourself for keeping the cast alive while I was busy, you know, overseas and everything. I want to thank all the subscribers and all the fans for jumping on and, you know, watching all the videos, staying tuned, you know, being a part. You guys fuel this podcast. So if you aren't subscribed, please sub and tell your mates about it. And we're back. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.